Welcome back, guys. DGS. We have Cardinals pregame at 4:55 sharp for the game this afternoon. Right now, we have Mike Elam and Steve Butts, two of our favorites for the think tank. And guys, we're having this existential conversation, Steve, I know that you'd listen to. And I'd kind of like to start out there. We can get practical. We can get small. Let's start big. This is some sound that Wheeler played from a physicist, and it has to do with everything in the world right now, but especially politics. Go ahead.
No one on planet Earth is behaving rationally with respect to physics and UFOs. You have a claim that is being heard at the highest levels in Congress that we've lost control of our airspace. You either clear this thing up in an afternoon or you call in SEAL Team 6. All of these very simple things we don't adjudicate. We are just lying. Lying, lying, lying is the substrate of our society. We're lying about physics. We're lying about economics. We're lying about finance. We're lying about coronavirus and biological research. We're lying about monetary aggregates.
How many different hills are you waging a war on?
There's only one. It's called managed reality.
I thought that was really powerful and really smart. And I was talking about when we were all Rachel's age, we didn't have the time or the inclination or the resources or the bandwidth to really substantially disagree about reality.
Right.
We disagreed about how what we do about reality, tax and spend, no, cut the cost, you know, social safety net, no, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But we all basically agreed on reality. Now we can't even agree on what reality is.
Yeah, you know, so I was listening to you guys. It was interesting. It made me think, you know, looking back over the years, how did we ever get to the spot where we don't trust really any absolute truth coming from anybody? It's your own reality. And I just say there was a time that several of us here, we grew up in a different age when we had heroes. There was a certain amount of truth that we trusted in. Now, I think so many of our heroes, quote unquote, leaders, you just, the present reality we're faced with, you mentioned like Hunter Biden and even Trump, with everything that's going on, you're like, there is no way that you could have written a story that was this crazy, right?
No.
The DA down in Atlanta, you could have never made that up. How does a guy like Hunter Biden make $10 million a year? I don't know. It just goes on and on and on. But I do think there's this huge group, you know, in the middle that is still living life in a shared reality, and they still have their family, their friends, those that they love, and they believe that there are solutions to these problems. Do I think it benefits some where we've gone with corporate and political leaders to never fix a problem? Because once you fix the problem, I guess you don't need me anymore. I'm like, that's crazy. I'd rather fix stuff and everybody go on with their lives.
Yeah, call us on the next problem.
Yeah.
I guess I just go back at times like this when we have these discussions, and I feel so bad for kids these days. I mean, I grew up in a little town in northwest Arkansas of 3,600 people. I never questioned so many things that we question now. I didn't have access to the internet. I didn't have a device that was, you know, more powerful than the computers NASA had that sent people to the moon in my pocket that I took for granted. My son one day, when he was probably in high school, my oldest son, I asked him some question about something one time. And I said, do you need a encyclopedia to look that up? And he just looked at me and laughed. And he goes, no, I got it right here. And he just, in, you know, 15 seconds, he had the answer to whatever. The access that people have to information now is good and bad, right? It's great that you have access to the world's knowledge at the click of your fingers. But with that access comes so much more exposure that brings pressure that we didn't have when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't question so many things that people question now. I grew up in a small town, Southern Baptist community, son of a Southern Baptist minister. There was right and wrong, and you worked hard, you did your stuff, you hauled hay during the summer and played church league softball. Right? Life was simpler. And a lot of times I miss those days because I just didn't have to deal with all of this, right? But now we all have access to it. We all have to deal with it. And your world changes so much because you have all that access. And now we have all the keyboard warriors of the world that just add so much pressure to everything, and people are just so mean.
Good. What if we threw that on its head, though, and said that was also a managed reality?
How so?
In the same idea, the people that were in positions of power didn't use technology, but they still had the ability to deflect on something they didn't want to talk about or do anything about. And we didn't have the means, as you're talking about, to really know it. So you're managed, even though you don't know you're managed.
That's fair.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't mean, this could be.
I'll take it.
This could be from, 300,000 years ago to now with our species. And maybe that's just the way the world is.
You know, sometimes I'll say like I take a lot of crap, and I'm lying because I don't take a lot of crap. But I, in my mind, I am. Like I'll say something, I'm like, "Ooh, I bet people are gonna give me crap for that." Then they don't.
Who's gonna give you crap? Let's be real. Right?
So lovable.
Come on,
everyone likes Dave. But no, it's one of the things that I talk about in that I have no illusions, although I didn't care. When I was Rachel's age, I didn't care about anything, certainly politics.
Mm-hmm. I missed earlier. How old are you, Rachel?
32.
Oh, Lord. Okay, I was thinking you're
not
like
a great
25.
Response.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good answer,
no,
Mike.
No, I thought you were younger. I mean, that kind of changes everything. I had three kids by the time I was 32.
But I had no illusions that the government was doing their thing.
Right.
I miss the backroom deals. I miss when Mike Elam and Steve Butz could go into a room, be on two different sides of the aisle, work things out in a way that they were comfortable with, that maybe I wouldn't have done it exactly that way, but you're my representatives and I trusted you. I miss the hell out of that. I don't want to think about you guys. I don't. For the nerds who want to be, into it and follow politics the way that Wheeler does baseball, great. Knock yourself out. For lazy slackers like me that just want to, watch Ancient Aliens and get tattoos, I'm tired of watching what you guys do.
So don't you think, this is just in politics. I'm into it way too deep, of course. But I think most people are like you, Dave, and it shows up because you can tell by the number of people that don't vote. I don't think people really want to be that deep into politics. I just think that because we have this 24-hour news cycle, for example, and not getting things fixed, like going into the back room, it doesn't even have to be called a back room, right? Just get in the committee hearing, work it out, have some reasonable amendments to whatever you want so that both parties can tolerate what came out of the deal. Nobody's super happy. Nobody's super pissed. They're just kind of right there where they can accept it. I think that is where we need to get back to. But the world we're living in right now, of course, the reality is I don't need this, but others need likes and followers
This is great.
X and Twitter and blah, blah, blah. I don't really want
to
come up with stuff.
We're starting really existential. Then we made it a little more real. Now we're getting a little more real. So you're both still involved in politics. Still,
right.
You still have a seat, Steve. So what percentage of your colleagues is it that's keeping us from what we want, what we're talking about? Just reasonable, go to the committee room, work it out. Is it 5%, 10%, 30%?
And so I'd say in Jeff City, I could tell you, I would say it is 5%, 10% tops. Mainly, you've been hearing, the dysfunction in the Senate. It comes down to six people in the Senate that have gummed up the works really for the whole state. And of those six, it's really only one or two. So, the Senate's a different beast because they can gum things up for days and days on end. And the House, we can't do that, which is one reason it would be nice to get off the C team and onto the varsity. But that being said, when that time comes. But, it only takes a handful of individuals. And, we got rid of a couple knuckleheads a couple years ago, and I thought things would be better. But there's just always a couple more, unfortunately, to step in and fill their spots. And
is that strictly the power of the parliamentary procedure that we don't understand, that you, with small numbers like that, you can still control things?
Yeah, correct. So there's no end to the filibuster in the Missouri Senate. So we have a more or less a 15-minute timetable, right? I say what I want. I can say whatever I want for 15 minutes, but boom, that's it. The mic goes off and you're done. And they can quickly move to the next issue called previous question in the Senate. It's not that way. So just a handful of senators, for good or bad, on the Democratic side, There's only 10 Democratic senators, 24 Republicans. You think the Republicans could just roll the table, but they cannot, because those 10, if they stand up to them, can fight for a long, long time for what they believe in. So we've stopped some really bad legislation from moving forward. But the opposite is true. And I didn't think you'd see this kind of infighting in a supermajority of Republicans. But that is the reality we're dealing with.
So I am something enough. Self-aware enough, smart enough, dumb enough, I don't know, something enough that I still question on a daily basis whether I'm right or wrong. I don't like MAGA. I don't like Trump. And I still question myself, are you completely wrong about this? There are a lot of smart people out there who disagree with you completely. Maybe you're wrong about this. What gives you the confidence, Steve, when you wake up in the morning, you go to bed at night, that you're on the right side of history?
Hope, faith, love, but I'd say what keeps me anchored and honest is if you have six young adult kids who are all like, you know, your kid's age and Rach over there and Wheeler, you know, those younger people challenge you. I say this, when I was 19, I had every answer for life. I thought I knew every last thing. Now I'm 65. I don't know half of what I do was right, because the world is a lot more gray than I think people really want to acknowledge.
I agree.
And when you walk in another person's footsteps and you see where they're coming from, their lived experience, not their managed reality, but their lived experience, they come from such a different place. I thought I grew up as a very sheltered kid in South City with Boy Scouts and CSMAC baseball, but it was nothing like you, Mike.
Nothing
it wasn't
like 3,600 people.
It wasn't
right?
like that.
A monolithic community where we drink together on Saturday, but we all go to church together on Sunday.
How'd you get rid of that Arkansas accent?
I spent a lot of time whispering, because when you whisper, you don't have an accent. I had a
I didn't know that.
I had a vocal teacher who told me that. So I pulled a lot of wire copy and whispering my words.
Is that why the British guys don't have an accent when they sing?
Could be.
Can you go right back into it? Like if you go back down to Arkansas?
If I get back home before long, I'm talking to people. Hey, Kev, what's going on, man? So y'all going out to the bonfire later on?
Cause I like Mike.
We're going out to.
I like this, Mike.
We were going out to the creek before, and girls were going to go out to the bluffs. So y'all want to go hang out there? Bob's got some beer. That's going to be fun. We're doing a character later. We can do that. I grew up with a bunch of people who talk like this, but you know what? Everybody got along. Generally, things were good. If you had fights, it had fists, not guns.
Yeah,
and
problems got
solved.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break here so we have plenty of time on the other side for another question I have for the guys on Think Tank. DGS, be right back. Welcome back, guys. DGS, Cardinals game. Pre-game coming up at 4:55. Our buddies Mike Elam and Steve Butcher here with us. So let's get very practical. Let's talk about the city and having lived through the Kim Gardner era with both you guys. I am more relaxed now.
Yeah.
I'm not as jacked up and you know, things are less dramatic, but I'm also not feeling, and I know feelings aren't facts, but being a downtowner, I'm not feeling safer yet. Fair enough?
Oh, it is fair enough. So, you know, I'm a lifelong city guy. I love the city. I'm only in this, you know, to do my little piece to help the city. But there are statistics, and then there is the narrative that I think we still feel. And we're a long way away from people feeling safer in the city of St. Louis. But the city, from a crime perspective, is going in the right direction. And I mean, I'm confident one or two more years of Kim Gardner, we would have not had a city any longer. But Gabe Gore's the right guy. He's going to run for a full term. I'll be at his fundraiser on a week from Thursday. Mm-hmm. That with the new police chief, I think Chief Tracy is at least got the department, you know, moving in a more positive direction, maybe not as quickly as we all want, but it is going to be several years before the actual narrative, the shared reality, you know, I think is closer to what we need to be talking about. But I'll just say in South St. Louis, I mean, we're working from north to south, but in terms of just trying to get a little bit of a grip on guns so the gun violence goes down a little bit, that would be huge. But we've got a lot of issues to face. But I do think Gabe Gore getting some of the bad guys off the street is a big start.
So I'm going, just my intuition tells me that like when we keep saying when we were Rachel's age, but it's true. When I was 30 years old coming downtown, I was afraid of a stick up. You're right. I was afraid of someone, your money or your life. Well, now you can have my wallet because within 20 seconds, all my credit cards will be shut off. So only the dumbest people are out there doing stick ups.
Right.
What are they doing? What's the real crime we're worrying about now, both in the city and in St. Charles?
Well, in the city, I think it's more of just the random shootings and the fact that at any given time, you could say the wrong thing to somebody and they'll pull out a gun and shoot. And unfortunately, they haven't been to a range and learned how to hit what they're shooting at. So anybody is fair game because they're just going to spray bullets everywhere. And so I judge crime in the city a little differently lately. My daughter, about a year ago, started dating a St. Louis City police officer. And he's third generation cop. So I always check in with him. Hey, what about this? What about that? Right. And he agrees the police officers working with the circuit attorney's office night and day compared to what it was. We should feel good about that. But he was talking about the fact that they just don't have enough officers. I mean, in his platoon, they should have 38 people assigned to work in his area. They have six because everybody else is farmed out to other departments. So they don't actually have them there. And that's the big reason why they're not able to fight the violent crime that you really want them to fight. So they've got to get these officers hired. And I know they talk about the Rams money and here's this money. And, you know, Megan Green's got an idea for that. And I think it's a horrible idea. I think if nothing else, keep that money in one big fund and use the interest every year to hire cops. And just hire cops, hire cops, hire cops until you get crime under control. Once you get crime under control, now you can start talking about everything else. But until you have that expectation of safety, and perception is reality. If the people outside of the city of St. Louis don't feel comfortable coming into the city of St. Louis, St. Louis is never going to turn around. I mean, we're down to what, 265 people, 265,000 in the city of St. Louis now, the lowest population since 1870. You've got to get people down here, and you've got to get people who feel comfortable being down here, who are willing to plant some roots and grow, and not just be here for a little while. You can't get the transitional people to move into the city, because by nature, they're transitional. They're not going to stay. The first sign of trouble, they will pick up and leave. So you've got to work with developers. You've got to work with, I know we were trying to do this whole crime summit with East West Gateway. I don't feel great about it, to be honest with you. I wish there was just more teeth. I mean, at the end of the day, put a cop on a corner, it's a deterrent to people committing crimes.
Steve, last word, 30 seconds.
Okay, you know, It's unpopular to be a cop right now, right? Even cops don't want their kids and their nieces and nephews to be cops. But they are underpaid by and large and under-respected. So increasing respect, increasing the pay, and we've got to continue to crack down on something to do on everybody being able to carry a gun. I mean, some reasonable gun regulations have got to be implemented in this state. It's one of the things holding the city back.
Thank you, fellas.
Thanks.
Thank you.